Right now, it is time for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven.
Candlelight and wine, table just for two.
Seated at our table today, once again, Arthur Schwartz.
Once again.
Thank heaven, tradition.
Yeah.
That was my...
Let's see, we're coming up on St. Patrick's Day. I don't do green bagels.
You don't?
No.
You know, food writers, food editors, like myself, used to be, think in terms of holidays and their foods. It gets you through the year.
That's right.
Oh, we don't have to think about what to put in the paper this week. It's St. Patrick's Day. anyway, but it's not St. Pat. It is. The holidays are coming up. I was reminded of this when I went to my Italian market, Coluccio, Di Coluccio and Sons. Although there are two sons, there's a daughter. But at the time that they named the business, there was no daughter. She was sort of an afterthought later in life. In any case, they were clearing the shelves of what was left of their panettone. In fact, they were practically giving it away. It was a two-for-one sale on panettone because they had to make room for La Colomba, the Easter version of this cake. The cake, as known as panettone, is usually a Christmas, New Year thing. And I don't know, you know, many of these cakes don't have preservatives in them. How they stay fresh for months, I don't know, but they do.
It's like that fruitcake thing, right?
Pardon me?
You know those fruitcake, those English fruitcakes that have so much, that last for 100 years?
It's true, but those are like dense with fruit, and there's some connective tissue is flour and egg and whatever, like a cake. Yeah. But, panettone is a real yeast cake, and... it's light. It's not dense with fruit. It usually have fruit, and it doesn't always these days because they make variations on panettone, for instance, with chocolate, or maybe just with nuts. A lot of people don't like the candied fruit and raisins that are in the typical panettone. But by the way, La Colomba is the same thing. It's just made in a different mold, and it's shaped like a dove instead of like a panettone. And it also, if you buy one for Easter, you probably still could eat it on July 4th if you don't open the package. Once you open the package, of course, it starts going stale. And they're always wrapped in cellophane very snugly. And then they come, and then panettone and Colomba too usually come in a very nice box for presentation or wrapping. Anyway, I know it's Easter because my store is stocking La Colomba. And also, I saw an ad for egg dye. By the way, anybody who likes to dye eggs, a few years ago, you can look this up online. A few years ago, I decided I wanted to do eggs the Greek way with the red dye. And I discovered that you can do that without the dye by using onion skins boiled with some vinegar, and then you cook the eggs in there. So if you want to do that, look it up online.
We have a show on that, actually. Was it red onion?
Oh, you do?
Yeah, you did it.
Oh, well, okay, I did it.
Yeah,
but it's years ago already. So, yeah.
We have an archive.
If you can find it, go ahead. Anyway, moving on. And so we're in between here. You know, it's the beginning of March. We don't really have to worry about Easter or Passover quite yet. And what I had some company this week, and it's an excuse for me to make a boned leg of lamb. My butcher sells boned and rolled and tied, beautifully tied, roasts of lamb. And I usually just throw it in the oven, roast it, you know, like at 350, 400 degrees. It depends on what else I might want to put in the oven. I always think 400 degrees is a good temperature to roast at. And one, like 2.5 to 3 pound roast, will feed Bob and me for at least three meals. So, and it's not a cheap piece of meat, but, you know, at maybe $30 for a 2.5 to 3 pound roast, and that's not a bad you know,
right,
priced.
when you basically
for beautiful
yeah.
leg of lamb. Pardon me.
No, and also when you divide it up over three meals, your cost is not prohibitive.
No. That's what I'm saying. You know, it's like $10 a meal for two people, and with prime meat, that's pretty good. So, I had this thought, however, at Christmas time, my nephew asked me how to roast a whole filet mignon. It's not something I do very. I mean, I haven't done it maybe in 20 years. But I used to, when I did do it, I used to use a method that I sent to him. I'll tell you in a second. And he reported back that it was the best ever filet he's ever made and that he will never go back to more conventional roasting methods. Let me add that he likes rare, medium rare meat. And when you cook with this method, you get rare, medium rare, all the way to just about the edge of the roast. In other words, there's no dark, more well-done frame around a pink center. It's pink all the way through, just about, except for the outside. And so I decided a few weeks ago, that I was going to try one of these lamb roasts in this method, and it worked, but not perfectly, so then I perfected it. So here's what you do. Now, this works for filet mignon, and it'll work for a lamb roast. I haven't tried it on anything else, but I don't know why any other boneless, relatively lean cut of meat wouldn't work well this way. First, you jack up the oven to 500 degrees. I have to say, my oven is very clean right now. If my oven was really dirty, I would hesitate to do this, because at 500 degrees, whatever schmutz is in that oven is going to start smoking.
And I just have to say, as you said, 500 degrees, my first thought was, okay, probably not, because by the time the smell gets out of my house, you know, just because the schmutz.
Well, have somebody clean your oven if you're not going to do it yourself.
Okay.
I had my oven clean. My oven was cleaned about maybe a month ago, and it's still pretty clean. So I put up to 500 degrees. Nothing happens except the oven gets hot. So the meat doesn't need any special preparation. If it's a filet mignon, you want to take the tail end, the thin, narrow end, and tuck it underneath and tie it up so that it's a uniform diameter from one end to the other. That's important, because if you leave a tapered end, it's going to get, well, maybe somebody in your crowd or family likes well-done meat. It'll get well-done. So with the case of my lamb roast, I'm looking for a roast that's about 4 inches in diameter to go with this timing. And my butcher usually has that. Sometimes he has roasts that are thicker than that, and I haven't tried it with something thicker. It'll work, but with a different timing, of course. So we're looking for about 4-inch diameter meat, filet mignon or this boneless lamb roast or whatever else you can find that's like that, I guess. So I crank the oven up to 500 degrees. The only seasoning I put on the meat, if it's filet mignon, just salt and pepper, and I use quite a lot of pepper. If it's a lamb roast, I do salt and pepper, quite a lot of pepper, but I also, my butcher always sends me home with a couple of sprigs of rosemary for this roast. So I tuck them underneath the bottom of the roast, underneath the twine that's holding it together. I tuck it under the twine to hold it in place, and I put that side of the roast down. But you can do it on a baking sheet. You could do it in a roasting pan. I have these stainless steel oval shaped trays that they use in like steak restaurants, and I like to roast and bake on those if I have something small. And the roast fits perfectly on, you know, the lamb roast fits perfectly on that. And if it's a filet mignon, put it on a sheet pan. You don't need the rosemary, although, you know, you could do some herbs on that if you want. Let me warn you, you're at 500 degrees, as soon as you put the meat in the oven, and I salt and pepper very well, actually pepper very well, more than salt even, and you put the meat in at 500 degrees and immediately turn it down to 450. It will, of course, retain over 450 for a while. And you roast, if it's a filet mignon and you want it medium rare, 30 minutes, I did this with my lamb, and it was a little too rare. You know, we can eat beef a little rarer than we can eat lamb, I think. We ate it happily, by the way, even when it was a little on the rare side the first time. But I really wanted to get it a little bit more well done. I like my lamb quite pink, but not rare. So the second time, I did it every... Oh, so I haven't finished yet. You put it in for a half an hour, if it's a filet. I'm finding that the lamb roast, 35 minutes instead of 30, or even 40, if you just want it pink and maybe a little bit rare in the middle, I would say 40 minutes at 450 degrees. While the meat is roasting, prepare what you need when it comes out, which is a sheet of parchment paper. You're going to wrap the roast in parchment paper. And then you're going to wrap the parchment-wrapped roast in 10 pieces, 10 sheets of the New York Times. I'd say the New York Times. It could be the Washington, the Wall Street Journal, too. What we call broadsheet newspaper. You need 10 pages of it, meaning not 10 single pages, but 10 sheets. And after you've rolled and wrapped the roast in parchment, just to protect it from the paper, you wrap it in the paper, and you let it sit at room temperature for at least 2 hours. Now, that what I love about this recipe is that it's a roast you can make early in the day and then serve it later in the day without, you know, worrying about something in the oven, running back and forth, checking, whatever. You just wrap it up, and it will be ready to eat in 2 hours. I let mine sit the other day for 3 hours because I wasn't ready to eat it after two, and it's not hot, okay? But, you know, medium-rare meat is not hot anyway. It's warm. It's warm enough to eat and enjoy the way it is. You don't have to reheat or anything. Excuse me. When I sliced up that meat, I did 35 minutes the other day, and I thought it was almost perfect. I mean, maybe somebody else would like some meat that's a little more well done, but not me. And so that's going to be my timing now, 35 minutes, but 40 is okay. So the rosemary does, in fact, give the meat some flavor, but I wanted to give it more flavor because the rosemary is underneath the roast, so of course it's going to steam and flavor the meat a little bit because the roast, by the way, does get nice and browned on the outside. So last time what I decided to do was when I rolled it up in the parchment paper, I rolled it with several sprigs more of fresh rosemary. I didn't put it in the rosemary in the oven with the roast, on top of the roast, because at 500 degrees, 450 degrees, I was feeling that rosemary was probably just going to burn, or at least dry up and not really do anything for the meat. Using the raw rosemary, which I sort of crunched up with my in my hand a little bit to release the flavor, I did find that there was slightly a nice sort of hint of rosemary on the meat. By the way, I got this idea from my friend Rita De Rosa, a Neapolitan lady, who is very accustomed to having lamb that has a rosemary scent because the lamb around Naples eats a lot of wild rosemary. And so the meat itself sort of has a rosemary flavor. When Rita was cooking in New York, she decided to give the meat that flavor by stacking her lamb chops with rosemary between each chop, putting it in a plastic bag, getting most of the air out of the bag, and keeping the meat in the refrigerator for at least 24 hours in sort of like this rosemary bed. And sure enough, the meat did get a little rosemary flavor, just enough that, oh, that's nice. Not a pow flavor, just a mild hint of rosemary. And it worked. I thought that my lamb the other day had a real rosemary presence to it. I really loved it. I'm going to do that again a lot, probably. It's a good company thing, and it's a good thing even if you live alone, because you can keep the meat, and, you know, just buy a small roast, maybe a 2-pound roast you can find, because the meat stays for several days in the refrigerator once it's cooked. And you can make sandwiches. You can make. I made a lamb salad one day with just a big salad, and I put strips of the lamb in the salad, and I made a Dijon mustard dressing for it with some minced shallot, and just oil, vinegar, Dijon mustard, and shallot, salt and pepper, and vinegar, of course. And that was very good salad dressing for the lamb. So, like that, it's very good. So I'm into a meat phase, I suppose, because I'm also doing something with Chuck. I don't know why. Don't ask. I'm not finding chopped Chuck or chopped meat or ground beef that I really love. I think maybe I've been a little bit spoiled by eating fancy hamburgers, and now I want my burgers to burst with flavor and juiciness. And so I've gone to grinding my own meat. Now, this is way easier than it sounds because I have a meat grinder attachment to my KitchenAid mixer. And by the way, all the pieces go in the dishwasher. You don't even have to clean up very much. And I've been buying Chuck roasts at Costco. Now, they're very thick, big Chuck roasts that you would make pot roast with. $6 a pound. That's, by the way, what my butcher charges for his way too lean chopped meat. I want some fat. So I buy these roasts, I chunk it up, I push it through the meat grinder, it takes all 5 minutes. But the little trick that I have learned, actually, from a North African cook, is for every pound of meat, I'll get to the meat in a second here about the fat content, for every pound of meat, I put in a half of a small to medium onion in through the meat grinder. It will, of course, turn into mush juice in the meat grinder. I put it in, by the way, somewhere in the middle of grinding up the meat so that the last pieces of meat clean out the grinder of any onion. And I used the coarse grind on my grinder. You know, there's a little die, so to speak, that the meat comes out of, and there's a small hole one and a large hole one. And I've been using the large hole one. The other day I decided, maybe I'm going to try the small one to see. I don't want it too mushy. And I like the small one better. So all you have to do is put salt and pepper on top of this meat. And I do knead it a little bit. You know, the old advice about don't handle the ground meat too much, it becomes tough, is a Bubba Meinzer, old wives' tale. And in this case, if you really want the whole Bubba Meinzer?
Bubba Meinzer?
A Meinzer is a tail, and a Bubba is a grandma. So
right.
It's a grandma tail. Meaning,
yeah,
in the old days,
it meant
it wasn't true. But
right.
Now we've learned through science that a lot of grandma's tales were true. A lot of things, little grandma advice. Oh, we proved it scientifically. So here's the deal with fat. I now see that in the supermarket they label ground meat by fat content, which is a really good thing because I don't want 90% lean or 95% lean. I think that ends up tasting like sawdust. I'm looking for 80% lean, meaning 20% fat. But I'm watching, you know, every once in a blue moon, I watch food TV, and I'm noticing that these famous hamburger places are actually using 70% lean, meaning 30% fat. That's a large content. Now, I'm not weighing my chuck roasts and taking off the fat and seeing how much that weighs, blah, blah, blah. But my guess is that the roasts that I've been buying are at least 20% fat. There are big chunks of white fat usually in these roasts. The meat is marbled somewhat. Where I buy the meat at Costco, they trim it the outside pretty well, but there's still a tiny bit of fat. So I think altogether it couldn't be much more than 20% fat, but not a lot less either. In that vicinity. I noticed, by the way, that some of these fancy hamburger places are using fancy meat for the hamburgers. I don't really see that's necessary. I also, now that they label chopped meat by the fat content, they don't always label it by what cut of meat it is. I mean, it's whatever they have, whatever trimmings they have, even for ground meat. And so this is pure chuck. This is a chuck roast. And I must say, it's really, really flavorful. It's really everything you want from a hamburger, maybe, and more. And once you've cooked them, and I cook them for about, I heat up my black iron skillet to the highest possible heat. I mean, I let it really preheat for a good 5 minutes over high heat. And as soon as the burgers hit the pan, they should start, you know, sizzling. And I don't squish them down. And even not squishing them down, having a thick burger, I would say depending on how well done you want your burger, 3 to 4 minutes in this hot pan on either side. And that's all you need. That's for a medium rare hamburger. If you like it well done, your choice. You will see how much fat renders from these burgers. You will end up with several tablespoons of fat in the pan. And by the way, the onion gives it a very nice flavor, but also aids in the caramelization of the surface. So, in fact, if you use too much onion, which I have done, well, I should say not too much, but more than half of a small onion per pound of meat, you're going to see it ends up, the burgers end up getting very brown, and you may have to flip them a couple of times just so they don't burn, because, of course, onion, which has a sugar content, can burn quite easily. Last time I made burgers like this, they were gorgeously brown. They were really very pink in the inside, and they had a slight onion flavor, which you don't really see, you don't really taste immediately. You'd have to maybe know that there was onion there for you even to taste it. It does help keep the burgers moist, too. Pardon me?
This is an old memory. We used to... my mom used to make hamburgers. She was an indifferent cook, let's just say. And one day, I don't know why, she chopped up shallot. Oh, I know. She'd been talking to her next-door neighbor. And she chopped up some shallot, and she put it in the, in the burger, basically, before she made the patties.
Salad?
Shallot.
Oh, shallot. Okay, good.
Okay. It was
good idea.
It was terrific. It was just, and so I named them at that time, this is again decades ago, revolutionary hamburgers.
Uh-huh.
Because they were so good.
Well, and do it again.
I would beg her for, I mean, and as you say, they crunched up. I mean, there was the crunch in there. But it
no,
was,
there's no crunch when I do it through the grinder.
Right.
If you're dicing the onion or the shallot, sure, you know.
But the shallots were cut into a thin, you know, I don't know how to use the right cooking words, but if you cut the shallot and you have little thin rings.
Yeah.
Sliced shallot.
Well, that's gonna give you a tiny bit of crunch, but what I'm doing is grinding it up in the grinder,
right.
So you don't get any crunch. You just get some flavor and juiciness.
But the flavor is just
it is.
It's well
very good.
Worth
in fact,
the price.
The other day when I unbelievably was out of onions, I had like half an onion in the house. But I did have shallots. I actually considered throwing some shallots into the meat grinder with the meat. Maybe I will next time. I'm suddenly using shallots much more than I used to. And by the way, I have somebody in the house here who will go unnamed. He doesn't eat raw onion, but he will eat raw shallot.
I can
sneak shallot into a salad dressing.
That unnamed individual could come sit next to me because I will not eat raw onion. It makes me ill. Didn't used to, but it does now.
Well, you know, we change as we get older.
Apparently. So
sometimes for the better.
As we evolve. let's call it evolving.
I put rice in my hamburgers.
Rice?
Yep.
Raw?
I take a little bit of cooked rice and put them in my hamburgers with garlic and onion. And a little bit of, allspice. Seasoning, and it comes out really nice.
Allspice?
I bet you it does, but it's a little too much for me, gotta
yeah.
say.
It's
what does the rice do?
I'm eating meat, I want meat. The onion was already a little compromised, but I must say it does aid in the browning of the burgers, so be careful.
And it also, it cuts down the burger content, which cuts down on the calories and stuff like that.
Well, I don't know, I'm not adding rice because... I'm sort of carb-phobic these days. I'm not really phobic, but I'm very choosy about my carbohydrates.
Plus, you've never been Mr. Rice, at least if what you said last week is anything to go by.
No, I'm not Mr. Rice. Yeah. No, I can live without rice.
I love rice. I can cook rice. I take a little schmaltz, put it in cooked rice. Then I cook my rice, and then I take a little the chicken stock that I've saved, and then I put some schmaltz in that, and I put rice in it. And,
well, that's delicious.
And I'm happy. I'm happy as a pig rolling in mud.
I'm well, sure. there's a very
there's a very famous Chinese dish, which actually is most famous in Singapore, Hainanese chicken. And Hainanese chicken always comes with rice that has been cooked with the broth and the rendered chicken fat from the broth. Of the chicken, which is cooked in water, obviously, if it's got broth in the end. So I did this fairly recently. I made my own Hainanese chicken. You know what? The chicken itself wasn't as good as what I ate in Singapore or what I can get here in Brooklyn. So I have to say, have a great week.
And eat well.
And you too.
Okay. Right. Take care, Arthur. Bye-bye. Arthur Schwartz, the food maven on Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com, and the Robin Hood Radio Network. Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven from Hathaway Young, located on South Center Street in Millerton, Flawless Catering and Event Planning, hathawayyoung.com. John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467, on the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Groceries on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. In Hillsdale, New York, Hillsdale Home Chef with two beautiful teaching classes, and they've got classes to go in those cooking rooms. More information, 518-325-7000, hghshomechef.com. And Haven Cafe in Lenox, Massachusetts, offering quality food and excellent service. From a fresh cup of great coffee to healthy, delicious breakfast, or sit down with a dinner with a tasty, life-enhancing meal that you can take home. Also, they feature catering. Supporting local organic farmers, environmentally conscious, and epicurious distributors, havencafebakery.com.